B.O.B.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. Last week, Carmen and I reviewed the status of the treatment of chronic pain from the point of view of the regulators, the doctors, and the patients. And today, we're going to dissect depression and try to present it in a more understandable light so that you may recognize it in friends, family, and maybe even yourself. Depression is a mood disorder, so maybe we'd better define mood in the medical sense first.
According to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, mood is a conscious state of mind or predominant emotion, a feeling.
While dictionary.com has one definition that defines mood as a state of gloom or bad temper. But I think that the best definition, at least in a medical sense, is that mood means a pervasive and sustained emotion that, when extreme, can color one's whole view of life.
For example, in psychiatry and psychology, the term is generally used to refer to either elation or depression.
So depression is a mood that causes a persistent feeling of sadness and even loss of interest. Sometimes it's called major depressive disorder. Throughout medical school, I had always heard the term, and I always hear of patients with major depression. But no one ever really defined the term minor depression. I mean, if there's major depression, you'd guess that there's something also called minor depression. So now Carmen is going to tell you what is generally meant by the term minor depression.
Minor depression is also sometimes called minor depressive disorder. Like major depression, it is also mood disorder. However, it does not meet the full criteria for major depressive disorder.
But at least two depressive symptoms must be present and for at least 2 weeks. As a matter of fact, the term minor depressive disorder was never even accepted as a medical term.
Nevertheless, a person is considered to have minor depressive disorder if they experience 2 to 4 depressive symptoms, with one of them being either depressed mood or loss of interest or pleasure during a 2-week period, but cannot have experienced the same symptoms for at least a 2-year period.
Otherwise, it may then be defined as major depression. Many times, no treatment is necessary for minor depression, but there are some treatments that have been found to help. And these include cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, antidepressant medication, and combination therapy.
Many feel that minor depressive disorder is actually an early stage of major depressive disorder, or it may just be highly predictive of a major depressive disorder to follow.
So, let's get to the discussion of major depression. It's also called clinical depression. So if you hear that term being bandied about, now you know that it's the same thing. It affects how you feel, how you think, and how you behave. And it can lead to a variety of emotional as well as physical problems. You may have trouble doing normal day-to-day activities. And sometimes you may even feel as if life itself just isn't worth living.
This is more than a bout of the blues, and you can't simply snap out of it. Depression may require long-term treatment, but don't get discouraged. Most people with depression feel better with medication, psychotherapy, or both.
Some of the symptoms are, of course, feelings of sadness, tearfulness, emptiness, or hopelessness. And these symptoms can occur during most of a day and nearly every day. There are more symptoms, and you may not immediately recognize them as symptoms of depression. And these include angry outbursts, irritability and frustration, even over small matters.
How about loss of interest or pleasure in most or all normal activities, such as sex, hobbies, or sports?
Maybe sleep disturbances, which include insomnia, or its opposite, sleeping too much, being tired, with lack of energy may be a sign of depression as well.
Many with depression lose weight due to reduced appetite, or actually weight loss or increased cravings for food and weight gain, both sides of the same coin.
There may be anxiety, agitation, or restlessness, even slow thinking, speaking, or body movements. A big part of depression may be that feeling of worthlessness or even guilt. The depressed person, which could be you yourself, fixating on past failures or self-blame. You could be having frequent or recurrent thoughts of death or even attempts at suicide.
You may just be asking yourself, why am I sick all of the time? So unexplained physical problems such as back pain or headaches could be warning signs of depression.
There are some signs and symptoms of depression that are somewhat more common in children and teenagers. For example, in younger children, symptoms of depression may include sadness, irritability, clinginess, worry, aches, and pains. A child that starts to refuse to go to school or starts losing weight without a known cause may be suffering from depression.
Once a person is in their teenage years, the symptoms may change slightly. Symptoms may include sadness, irritability, feeling negative and worthless, anger, poor performance, or poor attendance at school, feeling misunderstood, and extremely sensitive, using recreational drugs or alcohol, eating or sleeping too much, self-harm, loss of interest in normal activities, and avoidance of social interaction.
Well, how about old age? First of all, depression is not a normal part of growing older. Unfortunately, depression often goes undiagnosed and untreated in older adults, and they may feel reluctant to seek help. Symptoms of depression may be different or, well, less obvious in older adults, such as memory difficulties or personality changes may not just be due to old age, but actually to depression.
Even physical aches or pain, fatigue, loss of appetite, sleep problems, or loss of interest in sex may not simply be caused by a medical condition or medication and could have a root cause in depression.
So if you have noted any of these symptoms, maybe you should at least think of depression as a possible cause.
Before we get to treatment options, it is important to know that depression is more common in people whose blood relatives also have this condition. There may actually be genes that are involved in causing depression.
You may have heard that depression starts in the teens or early 30s. Although this is often true, depression can start at any age. Statistics often show that more women suffer from depression, but this may just be due to skewed statistics, since women more often seek treatment than men. There are, however, some factors that seem to increase the risk of developing or triggering depression, such as low self-esteem and being too dependent, self-critical or pessimistic, a history of traumatic or stressful events such as physical or sexual abuse, the death or loss of a loved one, even a difficult relationship, or financial problems.
History of other mental health disorders, such as anxiety disorder, eating disorders, or post-traumatic stress disorder is also related to depression.
And so is abuse of alcohol or recreational drugs. Remember that depression often gets worse if it isn't treated, resulting in emotional, behavioral, and health problems that affect every area of your life. Once depression has been diagnosed by your physician, it's time to look at various treatment modalities. When we first started today's show, we mentioned both cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, and medications as part of a treatment plan. We'd like to try and cover both on today's show. How about we start on cognitive behavioral therapy?
I think we should start with the medicinal treatments that are presently available and end the show with explaining cognitive behavioral therapy.
Okay. Let's break down the antidepressant medications into their various groups. Whoa, I just counted 46 different antidepressants available in the U.S. alone. It's the Amazon of medicines, names from A to Z, starting with Abilify and ending with Zyprexa. Antidepressants are often grouped into classes, depending on how they affect the chemistry of the brain.
While the antidepressants in a class will tend to have similar side effects and mechanisms of action, there will be differences in their molecular structures, which can influence how well the drug is absorbed, disseminated, or even tolerated in different people.
There are 5 major classes of antidepressant and several others that are less commonly used. Each has its own benefits, risks, and appropriate uses. And we'll get to those in just a moment. There are just 3 basic molecules known chemically as monoamines that are believed to be involved in mood regulation. These primarily work as neurotransmitters, which literally transmit nerve signals to their corresponding receptors in the brain. Antidepressants work by influencing these neurotransmitters and are serotonins, norepinephrine, and dopamine.
The role in the body of the neurotransmitter serotonin is to regulate mood, appetite, sleep memory, social behavior, and sexual desire, while norepinephrine influences alertness and motor function and helps to regulate blood pressure and heart rate in response to stress.
On the other hand, dopamine plays a central role in decision-making, motivation, arousal, and the signaling of pleasure and reward.
If you were to measure the amount of these 3 chemicals in people with depression, you would find that their availability in the brain is generally low.
So some antidepressants work by increasing the availability of one or several of these neurotransmitters, but in different ways. Of the 5 major classes of antidepressants, there are 2 that contain the most commonly prescribed antidepressants. These are the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. I know that's a long term, but these are also called SSRIs. And the serotonin and norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors, nicknamed SNRIs. These are the most commonly prescribed antidepressants in the United States, especially as first-line treatment. Other antidepressants may be used if these drugs fail, or in cases of intractable depression, which is also known as treatment-resistant depression. So let's take a look at that first class of antidepressants, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Now let's take those last 2 words of that name, reuptake inhibitors. These medications inhibit the reuptake of something, in this case, serotonin. But as the first word selective signifies, not all serotonin, but certain types. Thus, these medications selectively inhibit the reabsorption of the neurotransmitter serotonin. Therefore, the final result after inhibiting reabsorption of the transmitter serotonin has the end result of allowing more serotonin to be available in the brain. So the SSRIs simply make serotonin more available in the brain. This group of SSRIs may have many drugs with familiar names, and these include Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft, and Celexa, among other drugs.
These are often favored over the older antidepressants since they usually have fewer side effects. However, they can still cause nausea, insomnia, nervousness, tremors, and unfortunately, a degree of sexual dysfunction.
By the way, the SSRIs are also used by many physicians to treat obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD, generalized anxiety disorder, called GAD or GAD, eating disorders, and even premature ejaculation. They may also help during stroke recovery. Now we get to the second group that we mentioned, the serotonin and norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors, or SNRIs. They also inhibit the reuptake of serotonin, but they also do the same for norepinephrine.
The effect is that serotonin and norepinephrine are both made more available in the brain. By increasing both norepinephrine and serotonin levels, there can be quite the improvement in people with psychomotor retardation.
Some of these SNRIs include Effexor, Cymbalta, Prestique, Savella, and Fedzima. These also have common side effects such as nausea, drowsiness, fatigue, constipation, and even dry mouth. Now, interestingly, some SNRIs like Cymbalta can also be used to treat chronic pain, a condition that's really closely linked in the development of depression. They have also been proven useful in treating generalized anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, which we all know as PTSD, social anxiety disorder, again, SAD, and panic disorder, as well as nerve pain associated with fibromyalgia. another class of antidepressants apart from the SSRIs and the SNRIs are the TCAs, or tricyclic antidepressants.
These are actually an older class of drug that we first discovered in the 1950s.
Rather than inhibit the reuptake, these TCAs block the absorption of serotonin and norepinephrine into the nerve cells, as well as another neurotransmitter known as acetylcholine, which simply helps regulate the movement of your skeletal muscles. Examples of TCAs include Elavil, Norpramine, Ascendin, Tofranil, and Cinequan, among others. There's one more TCA called Ludeomil, but it is more appropriately described as a tetracyclic antidepressant due to its fourth anatomic ring. You don't have to remember that.
Common symptoms include constipation, dry mouth, blurry vision, drowsiness, dizziness, and weight gain. In some cases, irregular heartbeats, low blood pressure, and seizures can also occur.
In addition to their use in depression, tricyclic antidepressants can help treat chronic pain. They were also once commonly used in children with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD, but they've since been replaced with more effective drug agents that have fewer side effects. Although these TCAs were discovered pretty early in the 1950s, there is a group of antidepressants that we've used even earlier, and these were called the monoamine oxidase inhibitors, or MAO inhibitors.
These MAO inhibitors inhibit the action of an enzyme called monoamine oxidase. That is where the term MAO comes from. These enzymes help to break down monoamines. By blocking this effect, more neurotransmitters are available for use in mood regulation.
These MAO inhibitors, such as Nardal, Paranate, Marplan, and MSAM, are less well known, maybe because they're available as generics since they're so old. You might know them as Selegiline and Isocarboxazid, which are the generic names for Marplan and MSAM.
The reason that they are less commonly used is because they have some side effects that are potentially more severe than those side effects from the other classes.
These include severe reactions with foods high in tyramine. So you may think, tyramine? I don't eat anything with tyramine. Do I?
Well, you do if you eat aged cheeses, smoked fish, cured meats like salami and bologna, or some types of beer.
Oh, gee, not my beer.
If you're taken inappropriately, MAO inhibitors can cause tyramine levels to rise, triggering critical increases in blood pressure.
Other side effects include nausea, dizziness, drowsiness, restlessness, and insomnia. So you may be thinking, why even bother with them if we have other antidepressants?
Well, the MAO inhibitors have proven useful in treating agoraphobia, social phobia, bulimia, PTSD, borderline personality disorder, and bipolar depression.
Even so, its use is usually reserved when other antidepressant options have failed. These are not the only classes of antidepressants that are available. For example, Wellbutrin or bupropion, which happens to be classified as a dopamine reuptake inhibitor and is used to treat depression as well as seasonal affective disorder and is used actually as a smoking cessation aid. Remeron, also called mirtazapine, is a noradrenergic antagonist, which blocks receptors of the stress hormone epinephrine. You may know that better as adrenaline in the brain. Have you heard of trazodone? It's one of two serotonin antagonist and reuptake inhibitors that are used for major depression that both inhibit serotonin reuptake and block adrenergic receptors.
And finally, Simvax, which combines the SSRI fluoxetine with the antipsychotic drug olanzapine to treat bipolar depression or treatment-resistant depression.
So with all of these antidepressants, how do we decide which is the best one? Well, there are several factors that go into choosing the right antidepressant.
The main one is tolerability, since many antidepressants are equally effective in treating depression. We are looking for the ones with the least detrimental side effects.
Even then, antidepressants should never be used on their own to treat major depression, but rather in conjunction with psychotherapy, self-help strategies, social support, and the treatment of coexisting conditions, don't forget that, such as chronic pain, anxiety, bipolar disorder, and other personality disorders.
Something that many physicians fail to tell their patients after prescribing the antidepressants is that they may take up to 2 weeks before the patient feels any of its effects.
I've actually had a patient come in unhappy with another physician's treatment of his depression. He told me that he did not feel any better. So I asked him when he first started taking the medication, and his answer was yesterday, and I'm still not better. Another thing to remember are the precautions when starting any new medication. Antidepressants should be used with extreme caution in children, teens, and young adults.
In 2007, the ADA issued a black box warning about the increased risk of suicidal thoughts and action in people under 24 on antidepressants of any type.
As a standard precaution, antidepressants should really only be used in children, teens, and young adults when absolutely needed, and only after weighing the potential benefits of treatment against the potential risks. If your teen happens to be prescribed an antidepressant, like a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor or SSRI, it is normal to have questions about its effectiveness and safety. We all have questions. This is why it's important for you and your teenager and others in the family to be educated about antidepressant effects, including its benefits and its potential adverse effects. And of course, you need to know how to monitor those.
Especially in teens, antidepressants are best used when the teen is also seeing a mental health professional, like a therapist or psychiatrist. During counseling, your teen can learn coping skills to help deal with life stressors.
Your teen can also explore possible causes of the depression and talk about issues he or she may not feel comfortable disclosing to friends or family. Remember, all medications have side effects. So if your physician or psychiatrist suggests an antidepressant, ask about the common side effects. In other words, no real causal relationship has been found. If you have a teenager that is taking this medication, then the FDA recommends that you look for some of the red flag signs and symptoms of caution that might be a sign your teen is considering suicide and might be deteriorating psychologically. Now, these include thoughts of suicide, worsening depression, anxiety, agitation, feelings of restlessness, panic attacks, insomnia, maybe new or worsening irritability, aggressive behavior, hostility or impulsivity, unusual changes in behavior, such as hypomania or mania. I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, a terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We've also set up a website for our Medical Marijuana Society at www.medmarsoc.com. That's www.medmarsoc.com. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com. Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.